You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 6, 2011. This is episode 191, Wells Hacker, Managing Links and Tasks. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 191, and joining me, as I have had over the past 190, Sally Draper, or almost 190.
I think I typed all 190 of
those. That's for sure.
Good
that's
morning,
the hard work. Yes. Hi, Sally.
Welcome to July, and hopefully you enjoyed some great festivities over the long holiday weekend.
Yeah, I was telling you in pre-show that it's good that we don't have a video podcast. You could see how foolish I was as I ventured into the sunny skies of Wisconsin sans sunscreen.
So you're a little bit rosy this morning.
Yeah, we would have had to bump down the contrast quite a bit to make it more tolerable for our watchers. So, but fortunately, this is audio only. How was yours? How was your fourth?
It was awesome. We just really had a little bit of downtime, enjoyed some home improvements, if you can say that you enjoy such shop things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to watch the fireworks in lovely Sleepy Eye from our own backyard. And
nice.
Enjoyed that as well.
So. A lot of places, because of the dry conditions, are really cutting back on that. I know down by my mom in Florida, really bad down there. So now we always go up to Fond du Lac on Lake Winnebago, and they have a nice show up there and, you know, see family and friends. It's a good time. So we are continuing our summer series, speaking of summer, kind of our we've called it our Wells Hacker approach, where you and I both have a main blog post on your blog at sallydraper.com and mine at martinspriggs.com about a particular topic where we usually walk people through a certain technique that we hope will be useful and beneficial in their particular ministries, whether it be professional or personal ministries. And shall we continue that today?
Well, I think we shall, Martin, and I'm excited about your topic. So I think you need to go first and get us all in line with our organization skills.
Well, this is this was a convenience blog post, and you kind of gave me a hard time a little bit ago because I kind of cheated. This was a blog post that I actually wrote during the week of Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Summer Quarter. I was teaching second year in a row. I've been privileged to teach a class on productivity to a group of pastors there, and that's always fun. And this particular blog post came out of one of our classes where we were talking about the effective use of lists and how to manage tasks and email within Outlook. A lot of people give Outlook kind of a bad name, and I'm not one of those. I kind of live, as I know a number of people do around here at least, in Outlook. One reason that I like it so much is that it brings together what I call the big three. Email, of course, which is the feature or the centerpiece of Outlook, but obviously the calendar and tasks. And when you think about a productivity workflow, all three of those are critically important as you're working through your day and how you process information and assign tasks to yourself and others. And Outlook just provides some awesome tools to be able to do that. And my blog post this week really focuses on the whole productivity methodology called Getting Things Done, which is on the thing I base my class on, but how to get it to work nicely with Outlook 2010. So it's kind of a narrow blog post this week, but those of you that use Outlook and are interested in some productivity tools that work nicely within it, this is a great blog post for you. And I won't go through all the steps here, but just two things I wanted to point out. And a lot of people aren't aware that with Outlook 2010, they introduced a new concept called Quick Steps. I guess the best thing to equate it to is kind of like the old school macros, where you basically train it and say, you know, when I click this, do this, 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 and this. And that's what quick steps are. So in the context of productivity, I've got three quick steps that I use and I built and use on a daily basis. One is called action, one is called defer, and one is called tickler. The action one takes an email and essentially makes it into a task and gives it a category, like email or call somebody. The one called defer takes an email and essentially adds it to the calendar for me to address it on a particular day or be a resource material for items that are happening on that day. And the last one is called tickler, and this I've recently developed for myself and has been a real help. So in the course of time, you get all kinds of emails that maybe you're not really ready to deal with at a particular time. In fact, you may never want to deal with them, but you may in the future. So you don't want to totally shut the door on it and hit delete. You just want to kind of save it for later and deal with it at another time. Maybe it's a class that's coming up over the summer. Maybe it's like our final web class. You just had one, Sally, in New Ulm. I've got one coming up in August. So you receive this final web class, but you're not quite sure you want to go, but maybe you want to think about it in July. So you create tickler folders, and this quick step actually adds it to the month of your choice. And then you just create a little reminder in Outlook, which is real easy to do, saying, hey, check your tickler file on the first of every month. And you just check your July folder. You say, hey, there's that email I put there a couple months ago. Do I want to consider this now? And you go through it, and it works really well.
And by the way, they do want to come to Final Web Class. Just a little plug there.
Absolutely. Coming first week in August.
There you go.
So take a look at the blog post. It walks you step by step. It looks a little complicated at first, but it's really not once you get the hang of it. There is another section in there on using rules, which has been in Outlook for a long time and a very useful tool for a lot of different productivity tips there as well. So that is my blog post for the week, my Wells Hacker blog post.
So, Martin, how much does this solution cost someone if they want to implement it?
Only the cost of Outlook. So you can if you've already got Microsoft Office 2010 Professional, I think other than Home and Student, I don't think Outlook comes with that. But if you have any of the other versions of Office, you've got Outlook. And all you have to do is kind of go through these steps and configure it to make it work for you. So,
I just had to ask that question because I know back in the day when GTD was a fairly new thing on the horizon, mm-hmm. there were a lot of people that programmed plugins for Outlook,
yep.
and they were kind of pricey.
Right. There still is one out there. I think the David Allen Group has one mm-hmm. for $60 or $70, something like that, which will automate some of these things too. But I have learned kind of over the years now that that plugin, while it works really slick, you can do almost exactly the same thing for free and then kind of tweak it to your heart's content as well. So that's what the blog post really talks about.
That's what I like to
especially with
hear.
These quick steps. And there's all kinds of other things you could do with quick steps, like creating an email to a specific group of people, sending an email and archiving it someplace or making a copy someplace, all kinds of cool stuff you can do with quick steps.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for that.
Sure.
We're in the white Wells Hacker hat.
And Sally, your blog post was about one of my favorite tools as well.
Yeah, I've dug into Digo a little bit, and I know we've done past podcasts where we've had some Digo experts join us and explain the powers of social bookmarking with the online tool called Digo. And if you aren't familiar with Digo, I embedded a little introductory video in my blog post, so you can check that out. Go over and set up a free account. It's quite quick and easy to do. And begin saving links in the cloud. So that allows you to access any of your favorite links from any internet connection. And there's just major power in being able to do that. Mm-hmm. I call it my brain, actually, mm-hmm. because that's how I remember everything. And I can go back and do a quick search for a certain tag or descriptive element in the links that I've saved and be able to bring up those links very quickly and easily. And so that's just a wonderful, powerful tool. But taking it a step further, in my blog post that I published yesterday, the power that I've discovered recently is in Digo List. And it's very easy to add a list in Digo and basically compile a group of links. In my example, I used a group of links related to the 4th of July holiday. So I found crafts and pictures and videos and all kinds of things related to the 4th of July. Someone even tweeted a naturalization test that you can take to see what it would be like if you were being going through the process of becoming a citizen of the United States. So all kinds of really neat links. And I built them into a list. And with one URL, I can share all those links with people. And it's really simple. It's just like adding a link to Digo, but there's one more step where you can share it to a particular list that you've created. And I go through that whole process in my blog post, show you some step-by-step instructions there. So you'll want to check that out. And, you know, one thing I didn't really touch on in my blog post was ministry applications for this kind of thing. And I'd really, I think it has a lot of power, especially for teachers. I've been teaching a couple of online classes for MLC this summer. And one thing I do for my class is put together a Digo list of all the links that I'm sharing with them for discussion in the class. So they don't have to remember all these websites that we've talked about in class, and they won't always have access to the Moodle site where we're taking the class. But they can actually bookmark my links page on Digo, my list, and have access to all those links that we've discussed. So as a teacher, I think it's a really great way to share a list of links. And, you know, that could be for any age group or application there. I think it would also be a really great way for you to build a group of links related to a topic for staff development. Perhaps you're looking at curriculum mapping, or you're looking at your safety procedures and protocols and things like that, and you're doing a research on the web, building a list in Digo would be a really great way for you to easily share the information that you've gathered from your research. And then finally, I think you could definitely have some application in the church or school office. Maybe there's some resources, like I really like the Avery Online, being able to print labels and things online. And that's one resource I would make use of as a church or school secretary. And I'm sure there's many, many others, like websites where you can find photos or whatever it may be. And so you could build a link list that you could share within the church or school office and have access to all those links in a convenient place. So just some ideas for ministry applications. And if you want to learn how to do it, then hop on over to my blog post. We'll have a link in our show notes and check out the steps. It's pretty straightforward.
Absolutely. Digo is really an awesome tool, and kind of evolved nicely over the last year or so. And as you think about how we used to organize information, you know, in the past, everything that we had received, all the information that we felt was valuable, was usually in a document, PDF document or Word document, or back in the day, WordPerfect or whatever, WordStar. And we had some folders that we put stuff in, and we referred to that. Now with everything, or almost everything, on the web, we really need a better organizational tool, and Digo is just that tool where you can not just organize things into nice buckets and then share those, like you mentioned, but also annotate those things where you can highlight and add sticky notes and even share those with other people. So collaborate in a collaborative environment, whether it be with students or coworkers or friends or whatever, you have the ability now to annotate the web, as they say, with a very cool tool that makes a lot of sense to spend some time with, as you did, to make sure that you're kind of using the tools as they were intended. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this kind of thing. And again, especially valuable when you're putting together lists for different groups, whether it be students or whatever. So nice pick.
Thanks, Martin. I also spent some time with the mobile version, the new iPad version of Digo.
iChromie.
Yeah, they have their own browser, iChromie. Mm-hmm. They also have an iPad application where you can get to your DIGO list and you know, do the same kind of things on the iPad. So just all kinds of power there with DIGO. So I encourage you to check it out.
Very good. So just a reminder, if you want to check those blog posts out, sallydraper.com or martinspriggs.com is the place to go. Please feel free to comment on them, and we'll bring those up in the community feedback section, which happens to be next.
Yeah, and maybe we should lead off with the fact that we have a DIGO group that's related to Wells Tech. So if you're listening to our podcast, we encourage you to hop on over to DIGO and join our group. And what that allows you to do is tag things that we as a group can make use of. And when you tag it with Wells Tech, then we're able to bring it up and share it through the community feedback section of our podcast. And we have no shortage of great links to share today.
We had to whittle some out,
Yeah. Starting off the conversation, Gail Potratz shared with us a really cool infographic. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this.
I did. I've seen that a couple locations. Yeah.
It's kind of a rainbow-colored internet in 60 seconds, and it shows you all different websites, what happens in just 60 seconds. Things like 50-plus WordPress downloads and 100 new LinkedIn accounts and 695,000 Facebook status updates and 370,000 minutes of voice calls on Skype, and on and on and on. Just in one short minute, 600 new videos totaling 25 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube. And it's just really an impressive graphic and something that I think many might want to make use of in a teaching setting or presentation
setting.
Yeah,
that's where I tucked it away, too, is in my presentations folder or on my DIGO, so that I've got that if I want to pull that up for a presentation. What strikes me about that graphic, that infographic, is just the fact that it is so ingrained into society. It's kind of a given now that people interact with and use the internet. And those people who kind of ignore that and kind of live still in the analog world, especially in ministry circumstances, are kind of missing out on a whole segment, a huge segment of the population that is, you know, what we would call wired. And we got to figure out how best to reach those people.
Yes, I agree. Next up, I have some links to share from Ryan Rosenthal, who's a teacher at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And Ryan shared links from the Simple K through 12 website. First up, a blog post that has just a huge list of virtual field trips that you can use with your students. And they're not just geography-based virtual field trips. They have things like family and consumer sciences, a field trip about nutrition education or responsibility in the family or vitamins or whatever it may be. They have fine art field trips listed, how to create pottery and meet some painters and violin makers shop tour. There are field trips in the health category, history and social studies category. Obviously, that one's pretty long with all the different locations you can tour. There are even language arts and math field trips, and of course, some science field trips as well. So, this is probably one of those links you want to tag in DIGO. I know I did. And make use of this in the classroom if you're a teacher out there in our listening audience. Mm-hmm. Also, from Simple K through 12, Ryan found a post which details a lot of free stock imagery websites, including things like Morgfile and Pics for Learning. Some are just dedicated to teachers being able to use stock imagery in education settings, and others are more global, like Stock Exchange, which we've talked about here on the show before, and others. So this looks like a really great list, and you might want to tag that on your DIGO list as well.
Yep, very good. Thank you, Ryan. We appreciate you sending those over to us. Good stuff.
Pastor Steve Daly shared a link to an OpenOffice plugin that you can download, which allows you to export your OpenOffice or LibreOffice documents easily to Google Docs or Zoho. Mm-hmm. So Pastor Daly commented that perhaps you just want to do a backup of your important files over to a Google Docs account so that you have more than one copy of them. It's also a great way to upload your work and allow sharing and collaboration via Google Docs or Zoho. So great link there, great plug-in for OpenOffice.
Well, Steve is a big Linux guy, as I recall, and mm-hmm. it makes sense that he'd be using these open source tools and putting the stuff online in an easily connectable way, which is really what these plugins do. You just do a save and it goes and opens up Docs or Zoho for kind of the save as container, and away you go. So, nice tip.
Mm-hmm. We also heard from Randy Nesbitt, who shared a link, an article from PC World, 5 Things to Consider About Chromebooks. I guess Chromebooks are beginning to hit the market. This is Google's laptop that basically has no local computing. It's a cloud-based system. So you have to be connected to the internet and work with all of the software available on the internet rather than locally on your computer. And basically people are thinking through this a little bit and how this might have some drawbacks or concerns and how you might work around some of those things. So it's a short list. Adoption may be slow, they say. People just maybe aren't ready to jump to the cloud 100% like Chromebook would require. And also they point out that connectivity is an issue.
Obviously.
Because if you don't have an internet connection, then you aren't going to be able to work on this computer. And it also says there's no Ethernet hookup. So this is totally a wireless device. So without a Wi-Fi connection, let's say you're traveling, and it makes me laugh. If you go to cheap hotels, Martin, you always get free Wi-Fi. But if you go to expensive hotels, they charge like $10 a day for Wi-Fi. Or you can go sit in the lobby and use it for free sitting in the lobby or whatever. So if you're on an airplane, you're going to have to pay for Wi-Fi if it's available at all. So, you're really dependent on your situation there. They definitely have a good price point, they point out in the article, but some people may be concerned about cloud security and just not ready to go 100% to the cloud with some of their sensitive data or whatever. So a good balanced look at pros and cons, basically, around this Chromebook mentality. And, you know, obviously Chromebook is cutting edge. It's the first device of its type, but there will be more, I'm sure, you know, as more and more moves to the cloud. This will become more of a standard, and it's good to think through the pros and cons of this kind of device.
Yeah, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about this, this article kind of focuses on the enterprise approach or the enterprise usage of Chromebooks, but there's a whole educational approach and a different pricing model for educational institutions, which makes it a little bit, in my mind, a little bit more attractive because you can control the environment, your internet environment, and you can configure it. And one of the biggest benefits, I believe, of Chromebooks is on the maintenance side. So they do not require a lot of IT support. And if you have a hardware issue, then you can get it replaced pretty easily. So I think there's some promise there.
I'm reminded of their original video where the guy was like blowing up his laptop and getting a new one handed to him. And
all this stuff is there. Yep.
Wow. So, yeah. That has to make you smile at that possibility. So,
right.
I had shared a link to Bach Organ Works. I was turned on to via Pastor Jeremiah Gum. He posted this link, and I wanted to share it. It's basically free downloads of the complete organ works of Johann Sebastian Bach, and it was recorded by an organist in Germany and offered for free download on this website. So you can download MP3s of all of Bach's work from this Bach Organ Works website, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then rounding out our DIGO links, Martin, I saved the best for last. You had a bunch to share with us.
I don't know if I would say that, but I found a few that I think were worth sharing with the class. One of them has to do with Dropbox, which if you're not aware of what Dropbox does, it's essentially cloud and syncing storage. So you can put your stuff in this Dropbox. It goes up to the cloud, up to 2 gigabytes, I think, for free, and then you can sync it to other computers that you have. A lot of people use this for storage of all their documents, or at least ones that they care about. And one of the concerns there, obviously, when you're putting stuff on the cloud is security. So this little article, I think it was on Lifehacker, on Lifehacker, talks about how to encrypt your zip files to totally secure. You have a username and password with Dropbox, but if you really want to stay secure and feel a little more comfortable about putting your tax returns or whatever it is that you're putting up on Dropbox up there, encrypted zip files are maybe a good solution for that. Another thing that I found not too long ago, which I've been using very regularly, is something called a little app called Awareness. And all it does, and it works on both Windows and Mac, it's not free. It's, I think, $1.99, but $1.99 well spent as far as I'm concerned. It's a little reminder tool that it uses the sound of a Tibetan singing bowl or Himalayan singing bowl. You have to look it up on Wikipedia. It has its roots back in meditation, but I kind of like the sound. And essentially, it rings a bell every hour that you've been on the computer. So if you've been working on your computer without any kind of break, and they could define a break as 5 minutes, then it'll ring. So at the first hour, it'll ring once, and the next hour, it'll ring twice if you haven't taken a break, and so on and so forth. And I think it's really been helpful to me because I'll be working 3 hours later and then get up and wonder why my knees aren't working so well. And this is helpful for me to just, you know, be mindful of the time that I'm spending sitting in front of the computer screen. And I think that's probably good advice for all of us, you know, for our eyes, for our bodies, especially as we're aging, to pay it more, a little bit more attention to that. So it's a very cool tool, does only that one thing. And so if you do get up and take a break and you're away from your computer for 5 minutes, it will reset itself. And there's a little timer, so if you click on the icon, you can see how long you'd spent. So that was, I don't know where I got hooked up with that, but I think it tied in nicely with my productivity class of last week of just making sure that you're aware of what you're doing on the computer.
I think pastor types maybe, like you said, get engaged in writing a sermon or whatever it may be. I know me, as an at-home worker, the house gets really quiet and I don't really engage with anybody face-to-face for my hours that I work on my job. So I try to do something like that, get up and walk up and down the stairs at least just to take a quick break and breathe a little bit away from the computer. So that sounds like a good reminder tool.
Yep. And let me see if I can actually play this. You can hear what the Tibetan singing bowl sounds like. Let's see here. Where is that? I know it's on here somewhere. I can't find it. You'll have to try it yourself. Just go to future. IamFutureProof.com, and you can find it there. So. Sorry, I can't find that. That would have been cool to play. Anyway, and then the other item that I had to share via Digo was just a quick Windows keyboard shortcut. Many of us use Windows machines, and most of us have Windows keyboards. And the way you know you're using one is if you have a Windows key, usually it's in the bottom left. Sometimes it's bottom right as well, next to the space bar, close to the space bar. And by clicking that and another key combination, there's all kinds of things you can make Windows do. I believe this works for Vista and for Windows 7. And the one that this blog post talked about, in fact, it's a little bit of a video, is Windows plus the home key. And all of us have probably struggled with all the windows sometimes that we have open across our screen or screens, and you really just want to focus on the one, and that's what this Windows key plus the home key does, is it clears everything out except, or minimizes everything except the window that has the focus. So if you've got like 20 windows open, this one will clear all those down to the tray, and you can just look at the one that has your attention.
Sounds like a good productivity tool. I sense a real theme here, Martin. Like, your class last week had a lot to do with your podcast this week. So that's really nice that you had that overlap. I did also have a class last week. I taught Final Web
that's
for
right.
Dummies at Martin Luther College last week. And I just want to give a shout out to my 6 participants. They were awesome. And we had so much fun. And it's so neat to open up the world of web design to mm-hmm. people. And
see a few light bulbs go on.
Definitely. Our motto was, you know, that you can now make your website do backflips. So,
yeah,
you know,
I like that.
If you can dream it, you can make it happen on your website. So I don't have so many tie-overs to the podcast today, but we did have a great time in class.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that it for community feedback, or we have others yet?
I think we do have a few more to share besides
keep her going.
Yeah. Next up, a little bit of feedback on my blog post from last week, where I blogged about my iPad being an all-in-one device.
All-in-oneness, yes.
And I did hear from a couple of high school dads over on my blog post. Perry Lunn added a comment that he was considering buying an iPad 2 for his son, who's heading off to Luther Prep to live in the dorms this year and get started with his high school career. And he is wondering if that would be the device to equip him with, if it would have enough, not just a consumption ability, but also being able to produce material on it. And it was interesting because Dave Hepp, who is another Wells Tech listener, just commented right away that he had bought an iPad 2 for his daughter, who's in high school as well. So we've got Wells Tech listeners who are also high school parents. I love that combination.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave's going to be blogging about his experience and her experience over on his own blog.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'd love to keep in touch with what's going on with the high schoolers. And my bet is that the iPad 2 is going to be a huge hit for high schoolers and give them the abilities they need. So we'll see how that develops.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we heard from Cindy Krieger, who actually works for the state of Michigan, and appreciated the fact that I highlighted Mackinac State Park in my blog post. That was such a neat treat for us to get to be on Mackinac Island and visit the fort there. And she said an iPad 2 is on her wish list for this fall. So, Cindy, keep us up to date what your favorite apps are as you get that iPad in hand and begin using it. And then finally, I heard from Pastor Guy Marquardt, who was at Summer Quarter. Martin, I'm not sure if he was in your class or not.
No, he was not. I did not see Guy.
He said he was having his own iPad-only experience for his 2 weeks at Summer Quarter at the seminary. He says a couple of drawbacks, but largely a success. So, Pastor Marquardt, we'd love a follow-up report on how well that iPad worked for you.
That would have been interesting to have him in the class because as a productivity tool, I guess I'd have some questions about how, you know, how that would work on a day-in and day-out basis. I can definitely see it on the road as being a real valuable tool. In fact, I use mine that way, too. But day-in and day-out, that would be interesting to hear his perspective on that.
Yeah.
Maybe we get him on the show again.
There you go. Back when we get back to doing those interviews, which
that's
we
right.
are going to resume.
That's right.
Just not doing them this summer. So we heard on our Wells Tech Facebook page from Leslie Bergerman, who's a member of Good Shepherds in West Allis, Wisconsin. And she had an interesting experience where she's working on their website, and one of their website visitors told her that their homepage looked distorted in Internet Explorer 7 and 8. And there was a CSS fix that needed to be put in place. But the important lesson from it is that you're trying to design your websites for viewing in all different browsers, and many times people have older browsers. And mm-hmm. as we move forward with new technology and things, sometimes the websites don't render well in older browsers. And that's a real challenge for a website designer. I mean, obviously, we can't have every system and every browser and every possibility to even test in, much less be able to keep everybody happy at all those different levels. So at some point, your website probably is just going to not work well on older browsers, and you're going to have to, you know, say,
move on.
Yeah, update your browser, folks, to get the full experience.
They're so free.
Exactly. I've even gone to websites that'll just be kind of in my face, like, you have an old browser, you should update, you know. And I've had students tell me that as well as they're working in different online classes and things. So,
yeah.
It is a challenge for sure.
Well, especially in the Web 2.0 world in which we live, because you're using the browser so much, it really makes sense to pay attention to what browser version you're on. And especially if you're a web developer or a webmaster for your website, even if it's Final Web, as Leslie found, they do the best that they can, but things do change. And as they update features, it is really tough to keep them cross-browser. So anybody maintaining a website should, I think, at least install the four main browsers on their machines to just check it out and see how it looks and make sure that you've not done something that's going to lock out a large group of people using different browsers, at least modern, what I would call modern browsers. So
okay, and I'm going to just make sure. Four main browsers would be Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, and
Safari,
of course. Yeah. Okay.
Some would include Opera in there too, mm-hmm. but a pretty small segment.
Okay.
And Safari captures your Mac crowd for the most part.
One more comment to include, and that is from Perry Lund, who's at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa. And we heard from Perry about the iPad all-in-oneness for his high school son. He also wrote to us and shared a link to a web-based graphing calculator, which he thought would be a great find for Wells math teachers. So if you are even high school students that are at that point of needing graphing calculator, there's a great one online, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Desmos.com/calculator. So we'll put that link in the show notes, and thanks for sharing that, Perry.
Nice. Is that it?
I think that does it. Yep.
Whew. A lot of people busy over the 4th.
Yeah.
We will come back next week with some more blog posts and conversations about them in our Wells Hacker series. So tune in next week for that. If you wanted to contribute your thoughts, comments, suggestions to this week's show, lots of ways to do that. You can go to our individual blog posts and comment right there, sallydraper.com or martinspriggs.com. Or you can go to the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. All kinds of ways to connect with us there. Just go to the website and choose your communication tool of choice. Lots of ways to do that. Sally, I think that's going to do it for this Wells Hacker episode. Nicely done. And let's close the show with the music of Dawn Michelle Williams from her album Inspirations. Beautiful song, You're My God to Thee. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Tune in.